Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Thanks so much for being with us as you're listening to today's program. Remember, you can email questions for the mayor to ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org. Good afternoon, Mayor. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Emily. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Fine. Thank you.
So I saw you yesterday at the County Health Department's new vaccination clinic, sort of a last-minute space for our biweekly press COVID briefing. Had you visited that space before yesterday?
No, I haven't. I had stayed up to date on it by a conversation with the commissioners, and then, of course, our building inspectors were involved here at the city because it's in the city limits here, getting that building ready and make sure everything was up to code to participate. So, but no, I had not actually been inside it.
Okay. And since the clinic, as you say, is in Lafayette proper, and I know that different cities have been rolling out their vaccination clinics across the country, kind of figuring out how many people they can handle, traffic flow, when that's become involved. So, you know, has the city been involved or will it be involved in the future if there are needs or issues kind of surrounding the clinic like that?
Yeah, I mean, I had told the county commissioners and to share with the health department, and it spoke with my inspectors, you know, getting it ready, and we got it up and running quick. If there was anything we could do to help, we certainly would, because we wanted to expedite the opening of the clinic. You know, we got to get the shots into people's arms, and we want to do that as quickly and efficiently as possible. So we're certainly willing to do that. And in the future, if there would be issues with traffic control that would be necessary or anything like that, that's certainly something we are willing to assist with and stand ready to do that, because we do want to get people those shots and protect them and our community. And, you know, we'll play a role. That the location is a good location as far as traffic goes, to major roads on each side of the facility that can carry high volumes of traffic, and then the connector between Sagamore Parkway and, you know, over to 38 there can carry quite a bit of traffic, and there's a really big parking lot area there. So it's a good spot, and I mean, I think we can handle as they continue to grow and be able to treat more people every day. I mean, I think we're in a good spot to be able to handle that flow.
So the pool of people who can get vaccinated has, you know, kind of kept expanding. So people who are 70 years of age and older are eligible now to register. And talking with the health department this week, they definitely want people to know they're able to sign up. But we're also kind of finding that for some older residents, there might be a need for help with signing up. You know, some people might need a little more significant, you know, assistance when they're navigating online systems. I know when our reporter Ben Thorpe visited on Monday, some of the people he spoke with had been registered, you know, by their granddaughter. You know, and so how can the city, I guess, help facilitate some of that if we're talking about trying to move people through as quickly as we can? And especially since I think they are, you know, at this point, you know, booked a couple of weeks out for appointments. And as you said, we want to get as many people vaccinated as possible. So how can we help people do that?
Yeah, I mean, if we really run into a significant issue of that, I mean, if the city can play a role, you know, it's a little bit challenging because of health information and different things like that. But if there is a way from a technology standpoint that we can be helpful, we're more than willing to do that. And I think you're right. I mean, my brother got my dad signed up. My dad's 84 and he got my dad signed up. And I think we are in a place where we do have family members doing that. I talked to another lady who was having a little bit of trouble getting her mother signed up, but she got through the system. You know, a lot of people at the same time, sometimes it can be challenging. I've heard across the state that that's happening with the 211 telephone in particular. So, you know, we stand ready. You know, we would like, if that is the case, we would like that request to come from the health department. If there is something they would like for us to do, we'd like that to come from them to us so we could set up a game plan in conjunction with them that would be good for the whole community, and there would be a way for the community to be involved instead of kind of a, you know, a one on a one point here, one person here. If there really is a program necessary, we'd certainly be willing to work with the health department and the county to be a part of that solution, either through technology or personnel that could help people with that.
Well, and from a city perspective, how's the process of first responder vaccinations going? I know that that's also an important piece of the puzzle right now.
Yeah, that part went very well for our police and fire departments. We've had a vast majority of people get through that process, and so we're very pleased with that. You know, we're continuing, and I've had this discussion with Jeff Houston at the health department. Having those discussions, you know, when we move to the 80 and older, which I certainly understand, because that's certainly where the most number of people were dying, and certainly the ability to try to slow that down or prevent that from happening has to be our ultimate goal. And so I understand that, but that did take out, you know, the rest of the essential workers getting that vaccination. And so I have been in contact with the health department about, you know, and I know the state makes those decisions about when we might look at that, or if there are extra doses at some point, how do we get people like here at the city that work in our water department that ensure that, you know, 35,000 customers a day, including hospitals and everything else, have clean, drinkable water. And so we can't get too many people sick down there at the same time. And same thing with our wastewater treatment plant and even our sanitation department. You know, we can't have trash and garbage piling up, and we've been able to navigate that to this point. Very, very proud of our crews and the safety precautions we're taking and the ability to do that, because, you know, they can't work from home and they cannot not come in each day and fulfill those requirements. I mean, it's a public safety issue at a different level, obviously different than the police and fire, but it really is a public safety issue, a health issue from what they do. And so, you know, we still are keeping our eye on that, because we would like to be able to get those folks vaccinated also.
So yesterday, the Indiana Department of Health moved our county into the red category, the most serious category. We've kind of been looking at that kind of coming over the horizon for a while. And there are some shifts that will require. You know, there are changes to things like gathering size that now goes down to 25. You know, yesterday, Dr. Adler encouraged curbside pickup for businesses, and there are limits on, you know, who can attend community recreational sports leagues and tournaments. You know, what else do residents need to know and continue to think about now that we are at this most serious category?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think the message, you know, really changes. And we were more restrictive in some areas already than we had to be by the governor's order, with capacities that we were allowing people to operate at in different venues. But I think the message is still, you know, it's still the same, that and we don't want to downplay the hope that we have either with the vaccine, because there is hope and there is light. And I think for people's mental health and mental well-being, that's also important that we continue to talk about that. But we also have to be realistic in that, you know, we need to still continue to wear our mask and to socially distance. We need to be careful about our gatherings and how we interact with each other, because it's going to take, you know, the Operation Warp Speed across the country has not went as quickly as people had hoped it would, either from, you know, vaccine distribution at the federal level to the way that we're able to get it out at the state and local levels. It's just not went as quickly as everybody had planned and hoped for. Now, I do see each week in many places continued improvement in that. People are getting more effective and efficient in the way that they're able to do that. We're getting more people through, and I think that's a good sign, and I think we will see that continue. But until, you know, we get to that 70-80% of herd immunity from people being vaccinated or already having COVID, you know, we still need to be careful. Even the first dose that people get them to about 65% efficacy, and that's great, but that's, you know, you still have a chance there that you could get it. And, you know, there's different studies that even once you take your shot, how soon does that kick in, right? You know, and to where you get up to that, even that 65% is there, what the time frame is there. So there's a lot of things for people to think about, but I think if we stay consistent and just hit those three, right, wear your mask, wash your hands, and socially distance, those three things is just the guiding principle as we work through this part. We don't need to do anything else, I don't think, overly fancy. If we can just do those three things, and we can do those three things well to give this vaccine time to do the marvelous work that it's been able to, you know, the people that developed this record time, and it's, you know, very effective. Give us a chance to get that distributed, and, you know, hopefully by summer things will look different.
I wanted to ask, too, Lafayette had announced its City Hall was back open for normal business hours this week, including the utility billing office being open to the mm-hmm. public for applications for service. And it's still being run under COVID safety guidelines. But given that we are in that red category now, do you plan to roll any of that back or modify it a bit now that that has happened?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you people are required to wear a mask. We have all the X's still on the floor and the separation in the offices for people when they come to the counter. And, you know, when I look at the numbers, we were closing between 12 and 2 to do some extra cleaning. So, I mean, everything has been open except for that window mm-hmm. to clean. And we found that we can keep things clean. We can keep things wiped down without having to close. And all the, you know, we have glass up in different places now, and we have plastic barriers in the utility billing office between each desk, and we have glass across the front counter now. And so, you know, we feel like we can, you know, open back up for that 2-hour window. That's all we were really closed, was just that 2-hour window, and open up utility billing. A lot of people, we have moved a great number of people, almost 68% now, to using some type of electronic bill paying, so which is fantastic. Or they're doing the Dropbox, and we want that number to stay there. And getting that number up that high dramatically reduces the number of people that need to come into utility billing. We're kind of, hopefully, we're getting to the people that just really have a unique, complex problem that need that you know, service, that more personal service, to try to get it to resolve. And obviously water is a very important piece of people's lives, and it's a need, it's a necessity, right? It's not a luxury having your water turned on at your place of employment or where you live. And so we feel like we can do that safely. And because the other part of that is, you know, sometimes people lose track, and over time I could see this, where a lot of people do have to try to come down here for things they have to do in person mm-hmm. over their lunch hour. They don't have the flexibility to come and go from their employer, and that lunch hour, either, you know, 11:30 to 12:30 or 12 to 1 or 12:30 to 1:30, or some people even get a lunch from 1 to 2. It was you know, kind of eye-opening for me how many people I saw standing down here or leaving in some frustration, because and I'd ask them, hey, can I help you? And they said, well, this is what we were trying to do, and I can only come over my lunch hour. I mean, this is all I have. You know, they didn't have a job where they could come and go, or tell them, I'm going to leave for a little bit, I need to run an errand or something. And, you know, I'm sensitive to that. I'm sensitive to those working folks out there that, you know, schedules aren't exactly the same as everybody else. And if we can safely make that a little bit easier for their government to serve them and to meet their needs and to get their stuff done, we certainly want to do that. And, you know, we did go into red, but as Dr. Adler also said, of course, it's still too high, but our positivity rate did actually go down a little bit. The hospitalizations actually did go down some from the mm-hmm. peak. The number of people on ventilators and in the ICU did actually go down a little bit. We certainly wanted to keep it in that, moving in that direction. And so it's that delicate balance that we've all had to do during this, particularly government. How do we keep people safe, but how do we continue to provide the very, very necessary services that people depend on, you know, each and every day.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. Right now, we're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rosworsky. So I wanted to touch on, you know, kind of big picture what's happening nationally right now. You issued a statement on last week's events at the U.S. Capitol. You called it a dark day for the United States of America and said the storming of the Capitol is unacceptable. You also said those acts of crimes should be prosecuted. All of us have a duty to stand up and be heard, that it's not acceptable, and we will not accept this as the new normal. And obviously, lots has happened even since then. And there are planned protests this weekend at state capitals across the country. Our reporter Ben Thorpe talked with the police department yesterday, and they said they have a contingency plan in case something happens in our area. They haven't heard anything as yet about an event happening here. Here in Tippecanoe County, you know, someone did shoot at the front door to the County Democratic Party headquarters overnight last Wednesday. You know, I guess, does something like that happening indicate we should be anticipate something happening here? You know, should we be, you know, as prepared as possible for the possibility?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, unfortunately, in this day and age, you really always have to be prepared because you just don't know what's going to happen. And there are a lot of different issues throughout the country. There are a lot of different things that can happen, and they can happen at a moment's notice. I mean, if you look at the, you know, the George Floyd incident, the unfortunate incident that happened in Minnesota, you know, that's, you know, everybody's day is just going along, and then all of a sudden something like that happens. So, you know, from a law enforcement standpoint, you always have to be prepared at some level that something could happen and spark some type of civil unrest, or there could be a natural disaster. A tornado could come through, a significant flood could come through, a train could derail with some type of poisonous gas, anhydrous ammonia, different things like that, hazmat issues. And so, you know, those are things that we always have to be prepared for. Do certain things happening around put you at a heightened level of alert. I think that's absolutely true, and I know those discussions have, you know, taken place. But you know, we're just going to have to continue to monitor and to react appropriately, and we hope that certainly doesn't happen here. And you know, hopefully, we can continue to move the entire country into a state of healing and a state of finding ways to work together to bridge, you know, not only the racial divides, but political divides and economic divides, and, you know, break down those walls that seem to divide us sometimes. And you know, hopefully, and I'm an elected official myself, but continue to remind elected officials, particularly, you know, that have large followings that are working the federal government, that words matter and what you say to people matter. And that, you know, citizens should not be used as political pawns in somebody's pathway to advance their career or run for the next political office that they're thinking about running for, that we're here to serve the people and to meet their needs and to try to do the right things to the best of our ability that promotes a high quality of life for all individuals. And if you continue to do that, you know, hopefully if you have a career path you're looking at, it'll take care of itself because you're doing the right thing for people. So I think there's a lot of things that as a country, you know, we really do need to work on in the coming years, and hopefully those discussions can take place and we can find ways to improve.
So you're actually participating in an event this coming Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It looks kind of a town hall, kind of on the theme of, it looks like, where do we go from here? And you'll be participating, looks like Mayor Dennis, County Commissioner Tracy Brown, school superintendents, heads of area social service agencies. So what will you be discussing at this event?
You know, we're going to kind of wait and see, is my understanding. And we've double-checked with them. They said there's nothing that we need to prepare, or there's nothing that we need to bring, that this is a true community discussion. And if they're going to ask us specific questions, I don't have those. They've not been given to us ahead of time, which is fine with me. I don't have a problem with that at all. So I don't know myself. I've not been given any specific agenda or any specific outline that we're going to follow. There's going to be a moderator, I'm sure, and it's going to be, like they said, a community discussion. So I am certainly looking forward to participating in that and listening to what folks have to say and giving responses and, you know, getting and moving that dialogue forward. But to the best of my knowledge, there is no specific outline or, you know, that we're going to tie people into, you know, make people just follow this so that it is a community discussion.
Why would it be important, do you think, to have, I guess, a community discussion just in general right now? Do you think that could help people come together, put how they're feeling on the table, and come away with some productive dialogue?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, most of the time when people of goodwill and proper spirit, you know, sit down to discuss even difficult issues with each other, those conversations traditionally can be very, very helpful. They don't always go perfectly. They're not always easy. Many times they are uncomfortable. But like I said, if people enter them with the right frame of mind and to be open and to be honest and to, you know, without some preconceived idea or personal agenda, they can be helpful. And most of the time people walk away, I think, with a couple things. One, we do have, I know it's an old saying, but we do have more in common than we thought. Two, I have a better idea now how that person reached some of the conclusions that they've reached or what led to some of the activities or the actions. I don't agree with it still, but I understand how they got there. And then on the other end of that, you know, people begin to be able to see, okay, I really misinterpreted some of this, or I didn't understand how this was being viewed by the other individual involved. And so, or how that might affect a whole group of people. And now that they've shared with me how they look at that, you know, we can find some common ground, or we can change things, or we can do things differently. And hopefully what I always hope for out of those is from the very human side, that people get to the point where they can even say, well, I don't totally agree, or that still really shouldn't happen, but I see we see each other in a different light, that they are, you know, good people, they're trying to do the right thing, they want to work together. And when you can kind of take that deep breath in and you know that's where you're at, people then can really start to solve problems, make changes, and do things that improve the quality of life for people, and therefore our communities, our local communities, our state, and our nation.
Okay. I did get a quick listener question here while you were talking. Uh-huh. I'm going to circle back for a second to what we were discussing just a few minutes ago, that someone is asking, I use AutoPay for utility bills, but a paper statement is still mailed to me monthly. Can it not be emailed to save tax dollars, or is that already available?
Yeah, that is the next piece that we are doing, and we are working on that through our Tyler Munis and software program. And so it is our goal to get to that point. Yes, it's not there yet, but that is definitely something that we are working on, and we want to get there in the future. You know, we had went to an entirely new system few years ago that's allowing us to do things that we've never been before, including, you know, we have towers located through Lafayette, and we simply flip a switch and 5,000 meters get instantaneously read and the data sent to the utility billing office. We can see now when people have a leak, sometimes even before they know how they have a leak, and we can see a daily usage chart just all kinds of new things that we're able to do with this system. And we've implemented many of them. And what your callers ask about right there is absolutely on the to-do list. And we hope to get that done before the year is over.
We also got a question right before the show started. It sounds like this listener was listening to 1A, which is a program on WBAA that happens in the morning, and they discussed homelessness as a national problem. And Jim writes, I think Lafayette has made progress with its programs for the homeless and low-income families. Please review some of those successes, specifically the integrated programs at the Union Street Housing Facility.
Yeah, I mean, that Lafayette Transitional Housing, that project is completed now is literally something that we started talking about 10 or 12 years ago. We were in Washington, D.C., several of us, and we had went to some meetings, and I think one of them was with HUD. I don't recall exactly where, for me personally, I started to first learn about the housing first philosophy and how getting people housed, not only to reduce homelessness, but to help with mental illness and other problems that people had, really was the way to go. And it was at that moment, you know, we really came back here and started talking about a housing first policy. We had a meeting here at City Hall in the Board of Works room where we discussed this integrated system like they discussed up that we have on Union Street now. With Lafayette Transitional Housing, with a consolidating of living opportunities and other services in one location, and the city, you know, is a financial contributor to getting that built along with many other people, and I think that is one of our largest success stories. But we do have lots of others with our work with Habitat for Humanity, our work with LOM, things that have been done with CDBG and home funds in the United Way. And there is a real push here to really look at that housing first philosophy. The city of Lafayette administers a program that most people don't realize we do called Shelter Plus Care, where we house about 25 to 30 homeless people on a regular basis, chronically homeless people. Adam Murphy runs that program for us right here out of the city of Lafayette. And so there are a lot of successes out there, and the housing first philosophy is working, and we're going to continue to moving forward with that.
Thank you so much for your question, Jim. And Mayor, we're actually coming down to the final seconds of our show, and so I wanted to get a quick update. I was looking at pictures of ongoing work to Memorial Island and the carousel. Just wanted to ask what the timeline was for the completion of those projects.
Yeah, it's really cool stuff. Hopefully the lagoon will be done, all of that, late summer, early fall, and same for the carousel. That's what we're hoping. We'll see how the weather holds up this winter and spring, how rainy it is, but that's our goal.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for being with us today, Mayor, as always.
All right. Thanks, Emily.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions, as always, to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great rest of the day.